This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You are listening to the Matt McNeil Show, but no Matt McNeil today. You got Brett Johnson, that's me, at least filling in for hour one, as we're going to be doing some tag team fill-in hosts today, as unfortunately Matt McNeil has tested positive for COVID-19. If you were listening earlier this week, you may have heard him mention that they had a little bit of a COVID scare at his house with his daughter's boyfriend. And unfortunately, Matt does have COVID, so he's going to be out for the next few days. So today you got me for hour one, Todd Mickelson for hour two, and then tomorrow we got Todd for both hours of the Matt McNeil Show. So, Patrick, can't wait for Mr. Conservative Caller to call on in and say, see, the vaccines don't work. Even Matt McNeil got COVID. Love it when they use that straw man argument, when they just assume that we're saying vaccines prevent all infections whatsoever. So we'll have to see when we eventually get that caller, won't we? Calling into the phone lines here at the station. I'll be watching it.
I'll be watching for it, too, although I might not pick it up.
Yeah, I would not disagree with you there. So Matt, of course, as you've heard on the show, is fully vaccinated, also is boosted, so fingers crossed that it's just going to be a minor infection that he goes through, and hopefully he'll be back here in studio hosting the show in not too long. But we do send him all of our best, and hopefully he's able to get through COVID and feel better soon. But he indeed did contract COVID, and it is important to point out that the vaccines, especially with this very infectious Omicron variant, are not a guarantee that you won't get COVID. The biggest thing that the vaccines do is prevent severe illness, hospitalization, and, God forbid, death. So with Matt being fully vaxxed and fully boosted, hopefully he'll be getting through this in not too long, as I was saying. But keep in mind, the vaccines with this very infectious Omicron variant, they won't necessarily provide a ton of protection from you actually getting COVID, but there's a good chance you're going to be prevented from going to the hospital and racking up a whole slew of medical bills while you're hospitalized with COVID, and preventing you from going on a ventilator and whatever else can happen when you end up in the hospital with COVID. There's an aspect with COVID that I think often gets forgotten when people go to the hospital with the disease. It's that if you look at the health insurance system, there's a good chance you're going to be paying thousands of dollars out of pocket if you need to get hospitalized with the coronavirus. So, yet again, a good reason to get vaccinated. No, it might not necessarily prevent you from getting COVID altogether, but a very, very good chance you won't get that severe illness. I mean, first off, who actually wants to have a really bad cough and to have messed up lungs and overall feel tired all the time and to lose taste in your mouth? No one wants that in the first place, let alone going to the hospital. So yeah, I know we're waiting for the conservative caller to say, see, Matt McNeil got vaccinated and he got COVID. But again, this vaccine primarily is going to be preventing you, at least with Omicron, from getting that severe illness. So, like I said, Matt, hopefully will be back with us next week, as we do send him all of our best. He got me for hour one and Todd coming up for hour two of the show. So since it is short notice with me filling in, we're just going to have kind of a smorgasbord. I always like that word of stories that we're going to be going through on the show today, at least for hour one. And let's start off with this one right here. Patrick, you're probably aware that we have a big snowstorm that is on the way tomorrow that's going to impact, I think, pretty much all of at least southern and central Minnesota. I'm not sure it's really going to impact northern Minnesota too much, but As I look at the latest National Weather Service forecast, if we start off in outstate Minnesota, western and southwestern Minnesota, man, they are going to get hit hard. Mankato forecasted to get 8 to 10 inches of snow. Fairmont down in the southwest part of the state getting 8 to 11 inches. Redwood Falls 6 to 10 inches. But once you go a little bit further north, that snow starts to taper off a bit. They're saying Alexandria, maybe 4 to 7 inches of snow. St. Cloud, 2 to 5 inches. Then as we look at the forecast here in the metro area, it doesn't look like it's going to be too bad, but being that it is going to be snowing tomorrow, probably during that afternoon shower, could affect that commute a little bit. But then again, who is still commuting to work right now since COVID-19? I have not been in very many traffic jams since March of 2020. There's always been a few, especially on 494, but nowhere what it was like pre-COVID. So here in the metro, like I said, maybe enough snow to cause some problems on some of the roads tomorrow afternoon. They're saying Minneapolis about 2 to 5 inches of snow. St. Paul, 1 to 4 inches. Egan, this is my favorite one right here. Egan is getting forecast to get 1 to 6 inches of snow. Thanks. That provides a lot of guidance. 1 to 6 inches of snow. White Bear in the northeast metro, I should say, about 1 to 4. But the heaviest snow probably going to be in the southwest metro, as the Weather Service is saying. Shakopee could be getting anywhere from about 3 to 6 inches. So basically, if you're in the south and the west metro, especially the southwest, you could be seeing some heavier amounts. But for the rest, maybe just a couple of inches. But like I said, still could be causing some problems during your afternoon commute tomorrow. So there's a little weather forecast for you. I'm no Sven Sundgaard, so I can't go into much detail in terms of what's happening with this storm and why it's happening. I just look at the numbers and report them to you. So do give yourself a little bit more time tomorrow if you are out and about. So I guess while we're kind of making this a traditional TV-style newscast right now, we go from weather to how about sports? Let's do a little sports news right now, as the Vikings are in the news for kind of an interesting reason. They are going to be interviewing a candidate for the general manager position that happens to be a female. Yeah, there actually can be female executives in the NFL. Catherine Raich is believed to be the highest-ranking female personnel staffer in the NFL and is the first known woman to be targeted for a general manager interview, as reported by ESPN and NFL media. Raich currently serves as the Philadelphia Eagles vice president of football operations, one of the top personnel positions under GM Howie Roseman over there in Philadelphia. She was promoted prior to the 2021 season after 2 years as a player personnel coordinator with the Philadelphia Eagles. Before joining the Eagles, she spent 5 years in the Canadian Football League, including 2 as the Toronto Argonauts Director of Football Administration and 1 as the Montreal Alouettes Assistant GM. Did you actually know how to say their name, Patrick, the Montreal Alouettes, from like hearing that on SportsCenter over the years?
I did, actually. I've never really watched a lot of CFL, yeah. But yeah, I did know how to say the Alouettes.
Al, I think you said it even better than I did. Yeah, it's one of those names I occasionally would hear like on SportsCenter as a kid. So being that there's like 4 vowels in a row when you see that word spelled out, I'm rather impressed with myself that I was able to successfully pronounce that the name of that team over in Montreal. But Vikings are interviewing Catherine Raich, and just my thoughts on this right now. If you have someone who is a female executive, really in any professional sport, or someone who's on a coaching staff, I would really give them a hard look. Not just because, we need to be woke and we need to be progressive. I think of it from this perspective. If you're a female and you've achieved a very high-ranking position in a professional sport, there's a good chance you're probably way overqualified for that position and are going to do a good job simply because, well, females trying to get sports jobs in primarily male sports, whether it's as a coach or as an executive, certainly face a very high bar. Case in point, I'll bring up this right here. So Rachel Bolkovec is someone who was just named a minor league manager in the New York Yankees baseball farm system. And this is from her Wikipedia page, but in her bio, she talks about the discrimination she faced as a woman when trying to get a job within baseball. In 2013, she was waitressing and working for a minor league baseball team in Arizona, hoping to advance her coaching career, but after applying to 15 different teams in the Phoenix area and not hearing back, she did something interesting. So again, her name is Rachel Bolkovec, but on her resume, she changed her name from Rachel to Ray. And rather than emphasizing she had been a Division I college softball catcher, she only said on her new resume that she had been a Division I college catcher, not specifying whether it was baseball or softball. So again, prior to changing her name to Ray on the resume and mentioning that she was just a catcher and not a softball catcher, prior to doing this, she received no interviews. But after making her resume look a little bit more like a man's resume, this led to numerous phone interviews. But once people heard her voice, the only offers were for women's sports. And she went on to say that one team flat out told her that they would never hire a woman. So I don't necessarily know, going back to Claire Raich, the person interviewing for the Vikings general manager job, if she would be the best candidate, but I would definitely give her a serious look, being that if you're a female executive or a female coach in a major professional sport in the United States, chances are you got there having to overcome a lot of adversity. So I think she's probably a pretty qualified person, but I'm hoping the Vikings aren't just doing this to show just as kind of a way to virtue signal, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it. I would really give her a serious look, being that this is someone who has probably overcome a lot of adversity and, well, being in that personnel department for the Philadelphia Eagles, they've had some good teams over the past few years, including, well, making the playoffs here in 2021. So will be interesting to follow along and see if the Vikings do end up going in that direction or if they end up hiring somebody else. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break and come on back and give you the coronavirus update for today in Minnesota, as we have a record-setting test positivity rate. That's certainly not good news. We'll talk about that and more with COVID coming up next here on AM 950 with Brett Johnson filling in for Matt McNeil. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, but no Matt today. You got Brett filling in. That's me for hour one. Then Todd Mickelson is going to sit in and host hour two of the show. As if you missed the very beginning of the 4 o'clock hour, well, Matt McNeil unfortunately did end up testing positive for COVID. You may have remembered him saying earlier this week they had a little bit of a scare where his daughter's boyfriend tested positive, so Matt and the rest of the family got tested. Fortunately, Matt does have it, so sending him all the best. Hopefully it's going to be a very mild case of COVID, being that Matt does all the right things. He is vaccinated, he is boosted, masked when he goes out, so hopefully just going to be a very, very minor case of COVID. And like I was saying at the top of the show, the vaccines now don't necessarily prevent you from getting infected with COVID, but more importantly, they prevent you from going to the hospital and facing all sorts of medical complications and thousands of dollars of medical bills. Even if you have the best insurance possible, you're still likely going to be paying a lot of money out of pocket when you get treated for COVID, especially if you have a severe condition like a ventilator or something. Those things aren't free. And as we've seen from the health insurance industry and the healthcare industry, things cost a lot when you go to the hospital. So just another reason to get that vax if you haven't already. Prevent yourself from racking up thousands of dollars of medical bills. No, it is not a political statement. All right, let's look at our Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 11,510 newly reported cases and 52 newly reported deaths. Those numbers are not good. The state's COVID-19 death toll is now 10,939, approaching the 11,000 mark. Also a note, today's report includes data that was reported in a 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. So I the numbers maybe are like a day or two out of date, but they still give us a good indication that here in Minnesota, we're not in a good place, especially as we look at our test positivity rate for the past 7 days, which is really ugly, 20.7%. I even remember when we were doing the coronavirus update back in late 2020, and we were thinking like a 10% positivity rate was bad. Well, now we're at 20.7%. And that is a record high for Minnesota. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota in the high-risk threshold for community transmission of the coronavirus, and that's just about every state in the country, except for maybe the East Coast. It looks like Omicron might be waning a little bit in the Northeast United States, and that's kind of happened elsewhere in the world where you generally get through this Omicron thing like in 6 weeks or so, simply because it infects so many people so quickly that eventually the virus runs out of people to infect. So I guess under a best-case scenario, we can hope that happens and we get a few months of a reprieve and hopefully get no more new variants that develop. But I won't hold my breath on that because as long as we are largely not vaccinating the rest of the world and the so-called developing world or third world, depending on how you want to call it, there's a good chance those variants are going to continue to emerge from those areas that don't have access to vaccines. Let's talk about hospitalizations in Minnesota. Through January 12th, that would be yesterday, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,588. That's up from the reported 1,522 reported the previous day. So we do have an increase of 64 people that are now in the hospital. Of those hospitalized, 253 are in intensive care, and 1,335 are in a non-ICU care bed. The most ICU patients during the duration of the pandemic was 399 back on December 1st, 2020. So we're at least nowhere near that number yet. But then again, Omicron still has not peaked in Minnesota. And the latest hospitality capacity data shows that there are, get this, 23 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state. 23 staffed ICU beds in the entire state of Minnesota. And if you want to break down that number further, there's only 4 available in the entire metro area. 4 ICU beds in the entire metro. If you're in western Minnesota, there is a grand total of 1 bed available. And if you're in northeastern Minnesota, Duluth, or the Iron Range, there are a grand total of 0 ICU beds. You might remember yesterday we had a caller, I think it was Jim from St. Louis Park, who was telling us about his relative 90-year-old woman who was in a car accident, I believe, on Sunday. And unfortunately, she did need to be hospitalized because of that car accident. Well, she arrived at the ER, and unfortunately, there were no beds available for her. As of yesterday, she was still waiting to get a bed. And that's because there are so many people that are hospitalized right now because of COVID. I don't know. I know it sounds cruel to kind of say this, but if you're someone who has COVID and you're unvaccinated and you're going to the hospital, I think you might need to go to the back of the line. Because to me, that's not fair that this relative, for instance, of Jim in St. Louis Park, who called us yesterday, is having to wait 3-plus days after being in a car accident to get a hospital bed because there are numerous people who are unvaccinated with COVID-19 taking up those current hospital beds. She's been waiting over 3 days after being in a car accident to get a bed. Imagine if you know someone or if you or anyone else has a heart attack or a stroke and you need to get hospitalized. There's a fairly good chance you might be having to wait multiple days to get your hospital bed simply because people are going to the hospital with COVID and they're unvaccinated. I don't even get the logic of if you're someone who is against vaccinations, why you're going to the hospital. Because the same people you are saying are lying to you, that would be doctors, nurses, and other medical professionals. If you're out there saying that these medical professionals are lying to you about vaccines and their information is completely false, then why are you all of a sudden trusting them once you get sick and going to the hospital? I'm not necessarily saying if you're unvaccinated and you get COVID, don't go to the hospital if you get sick, but it does look a little bit hypocritical if you're a, to steal a term from Matt, a born-again believer in science once you get sick. I know it would certainly take us down a rabbit hole if we were to have some sort of law put in place that says if you get COVID and you're unvaccinated and you get hospital treatment, that your health insurance doesn't have to cover the costs of your hospital stay. I don't know if I would be in favor of something like that. That could go down a very ugly rabbit hole with other areas of healthcare, but it's just insane that people who are getting in car accidents, suffering heart attacks or having strokes or other major medical emergencies are all of a sudden not able to get into the hospital because people are sitting there with COVID. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Do have a couple of phone calls on the lines that we'll get to in just a minute. We'll let Patrick continue answering the phones there. Let's continue with our COVID-19 update. So as we were talking about, there are zero staffed ICU beds available in northeastern Minnesota. So if you're on the Iron Range or in the Duluth area, you're pretty much out of luck. Western Minnesota has a grand total of one ICU bed. Here in the metro, we have four. Ugly, ugly numbers. Let's talk about mask mandates that have been implemented in some of the suburbs around the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. Of course, a couple of days ago, Minneapolis and St. Paul instituted vaccine requirements to enter venues such as bar and restaurants, and some of the suburbs around Minneapolis-St. Paul have started to take some COVID measures as well, Golden Valley being the latest city, as they have implemented a mask mandate that is taking effect today at 5 p.m. Hopkins' mandate will take effect at midnight on Friday and will end on February 13th, so the first two suburbs, at least, to implement mask mandates are Golden Valley and Hopkins. Golden Valley's goes into effect, well, in about a half hour from now. The Hopkins mandate will begin at midnight on Friday, then end on February 13th. Other suburbs, such as Bloomington and Edina, have passed resolutions strongly encouraging residents to mask up without requiring it. The Minnetonka City Council is set to consider a mask mandate on Friday. And if we cross the river and go over into Wisconsin, they're facing a crisis as well, as the Wisconsin National Guard troops are going to help fill staffing shortages at the state's hospitals and nursing homes over the coming weeks due to a surge in COVID patients. That is according to Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers. So, again, a reason to make sure you do whatever you can to stay out of the hospital. We don't even have enough doctors and nurses to staff hospitals right now, at least in Wisconsin right now, where they've had to call in the National Guard to help things out. Let's run the phone lines right now and go to Gary in Minneapolis. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
The Trump Party, I don't know what the majority is. The statistics, how many of them are Trump Partiers? There are these COVID spreaders and filling up our hospitals so we can't get our care. But, you know, they're talking about having paid taxes, Joe. So I don't know how many times, just punish them some for being poor citizenship.
All right. Hey, Gary, appreciate the phone call. We do want to keep running these before we head to break, but always good to hear from Gary in Minneapolis making some good points about, yeah, Republican hypocrisy on taxes and kind of how it relates to COVID. Let's go to Steve in Bloomington who wants to chime in on the conversation. Hi there, Steve.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I'm a musician. I have a fellow musician, a colleague who makes his living singing. He's a raving anti-vaxxer. And now he is in hospital. Both he and his wife are in the hospital. He's been on a ventilator for 10 days. And according to reports, he and his wife are both having heart issues.
Ugh.
My singer was case 114, and it took a year for her to get her voice back. He may or may not ever sing again. He may not come out of the hospital. So, I mean, people just need to wake up. This is just common sense. And this is just being patriotic and watching out for your neighbor. That's all I have to say. I appreciate you getting me on.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And that's another aspect that I think gets forgotten when we talk about COVID and we talk about vaccinations is people who suffer long-term effects of COVID. Not hard to just run a simple Google search for a long COVID and find examples of people who are, well, basically needing an oxygen tank to be able to walk around, or as Steve was saying, a singer who may or may not get their voice back after having the disease 1 year ago. It has a major impact, and that's largely what the vaccines are good at preventing, not necessarily stopping you from getting infected. That kind of depends on which variant you come into contact with, but they are very strong at preventing you from going to the hospital and suffering some of those very long-term side effects. Now, if you're someone who is unvaccinated, look, don't just do it because you're making an edgy political statement. It's just silly if you're just doing it to make a political statement. You don't have access to information that nobody has access to. You're not special. You're not someone who's part of some sort of prophecy. I think a large part of this is that it can be very intoxicating to feel like I have access to information that no one else knows about. And that's what I think some of this does come from when you talk about people who are saying, well, the vaccines are fake and the vaccines don't work. I think it does come from that feeling indirectly, maybe, that, well, it's fun to feel like I have access to this secret information. Or if we like take the example of like a superhero money or superhero movie, it feels kind of interesting to feel like, well, I'm the one who is in the know and everybody else is in the dark. That can be a very empowering feeling to have, especially if you have people in your community or in your social circle or on social media who are cheering you on and saying, you're right, you are. We are part of this small group of people who are in the know, and we have information that no one else has, no one else knows about. I think that's part of it too. And really, just follow the science. And you know what? If you are someone who is going to choose not to get vaccinated, perfectly fine, but stay consistent on your position. It just strikes me as being very hypocritical if you're anti-vaxxer and then all of a sudden, if you, God forbid, do need to get hospitalized, you're going to trust those very same people you say are lying to now all of a sudden treat you once you get sick. 952-946-6205. We're going to take a break and come on back with more. I do have some phone calls we'll get to. If I get some time, I want to talk about redistricting in Minnesota as well. So let's take a break and come on back with more here on AM 950. Can I get some nasty bass? It's gonna be And we are on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, but no Matt today. You got me, Brett Johnson, filling in for hour one of the show. Then coming up during the 5 o'clock hour, I actually got to get running to another event. But fortunately, Todd Mickelson will be taking you home during the 5 o'clock hour. And then tomorrow, Todd going to be hosting both hours here on AM 950. As if you missed the beginning of the show, Matt McNeil does have COVID, and fortunately, he has been vaccinated, fully boosted, and fingers crossed, it'll just be a quick recovery for Matt, and hopefully he'll be back in the studio not too long from now. So during the last segment, as you heard me talking about vaccinations, look, if you're someone who doesn't want to get vaccinated, totally agree. That's your choice. But as we've been talking about on the airwaves here, just be ready to accept the consequences of your choice. It's kind of like Russian roulette. There's a chance you might end up being just fine. You may never get COVID, or if you do, you might end up not getting sick and just recovering in a couple of days. But you are at an increased risk for being hospitalized and racking up thousands of dollars of medical bills. And of course, right now, our hospital beds are already pretty close to capacity. So I think that should be reason enough to get people to either get vaccines, or if you are someone who chose not to get vaccinated, I think you got to move to the end of the line if, God forbid, you do end up at the hospital, because there are people who do have other health ailments that largely do need these hospital beds. Ultimately, now what it's kind of looking like, at least with this Omicron variant, is that, yes, the vaccines largely do protect yourself, but when it comes to the transmission, maybe not quite as much. So, yes, of course, that is your personal choice not to get vaccinated. I'm not going to sit here and browbeat you and say, get vaccinated or else, or, you know, anything like that, or any of the other fantasies we've heard from some right wingers, including Republican politicians comparing vaccine requirements or mask mandates to the Holocaust or something crazy like that. No, it is completely your choice, but just be ready to embrace the consequences. For instance, your employer might require vaccines. And that's no different than any other vaccines. There's been employers in the past that have required vaccines for many other ailments besides COVID. Perfectly legal for them to do that. So just be ready to accept those consequences. And like in the city of Minneapolis and in St. Paul, you might need to show proof of a negative test or a vaccination to get into a venue. Again, just be ready to bear those consequences. If you don't want to, if you have your own reasons, perfectly fine. I just hope you're not doing it for political reasons. I hope you really do have good reasons for not getting your vaccine, and just be ready to accept those consequences. Let's run the phone lines right now, and here's a name we haven't heard from in a while. We got Randy in Coon Rapids on line two. Patrick, let's go to Randy, who wants to chime in. Randy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Brett. You know, I'm really happy to hear that you did that. You put that out there that, you know, it is people's choice, and it should be people's choice.
Just as long as you're willing to accept those consequences.
Exactly. I've been researching this for the last year and a half. So I think I'm pretty, I feel pretty knowledgeable about the whole COVID. I'm reading everything on all sides of the fences, talking to different doctors. I mean, I've really dug into this and been studying this for the last year and a half, and I'm not vaccinated, and I don't plan on ever getting vaccinated. I haven't gotten any vaccines for, I couldn't even tell you the last time I got them. The thing that is really baffling me here is this. I mean, everyone always says you got to follow the science. And right now the science is telling us that if you're fully vaccinated, boosted, and everything else, you can still get COVID. You can still give COVID just like an unvaccinated person. There's no difference there. At least that's what I'm hearing from the science that's telling me that so far. So it's baffling me that we're going to now mandate people that you have to show a vaccine card to get into a restaurant, when all the people that are going to be in that restaurant could give COVID, could get COVID, just like an unvaccinated person. And same thing with the mask. It's blowing me away that people are still, there is not any research or science that tells you a mask will stop the virus. I was listening to a doctor, and she had a whole bunch of titles and this and that.
I'm guessing anyway, probably not an epidemiologist, but all right.
Well, I think what her job and her title is for all the surgeons in the country, she's in charge of their PPE, of what they wear. And they asked, they said, well, the N95 mask, that's got to be the best one. That's what surgeons wear. And if you don't think masks work, why would you want your surgeon to wear a mask? And she said the reason why a surgeon wears a mask is for droplets. So droplets do not leave a surgeon's mouth, go into the cavity of a body. And same thing for if there's any bodily fluids from the person they're doing surgery on, does not go back into a surgeon's mouth. She said an N95 mask will not stop airborne. So all these people that are in, then I was listening to another study that said after wearing a mask, 20 minutes after wearing a mask, you're now breathing in all your germs and stuff that are now in that mask. And at work, this is where I did my own test, because I heard about this, and I go into confined spaces, so I have a really expensive monitor that we use, and OSHA says if this monitor goes off, you need to leave the space. It's uninhabitable for humans to be in there. And that monitor monitors, you know, carbon monoxide, all different kinds of gases, and it also monitors oxygen. Oxygen levels at 20.9 when it's just sitting out there in the atmosphere. We put a regular mask on one of the employees and took the monitor and put it into the side of his mask. And in 14 seconds, it went down to dangerous levels at 16, and it started alarming. OSHA would tell me I need to leave that space because I'm not getting enough oxygen.
All right, Randy, we're going to leave it there. Appreciate the phone call. And when you do that research, I always find that funny when I hear people talking about doing your own research. Googling stuff is not research. Anyone can Google something and come up to whatever conclusion you want. I could Google the Earth is flat, and I could probably come up with all sorts of search results and find all sorts of scientists that could say the Earth is flat. That is the power of using the internet and Googling your preconceived beliefs. So, Randy, if you're out there doing your own research, find out who it's really coming from. Is it someone who has an agenda and is someone who is very likely grifting and trying to make money off this? I would say chances are probably yes. And generally, if 99% of the medical community or 95% of the medical community is saying, yes, vaccines prevent severe illness, getting hospitalized and death, I would generally side with them than the 1% or 2% to say they don't work, or those like, especially I love like Rand Paul down in Kentucky, who's an eye doctor, I think technically, but still is trying to pass himself off as being some sort of medical expert. So the bottom line is, yes, you can Google anything you want to have that fit your preconceived position. You can do that with literally any subject. That's why you generally want to trust experts on that and trust scientists. So appreciate the phone call there, Randy. You did say something interesting about how you have not gotten vaccines, I think, pretty much ever. I mean, I will give you that for being consistent. It annoys me a little bit less than when I hear from people who are saying, I'm not getting the vaccine. Oh, but I've been vaccinated against all of these other things over the years. But this vaccine, I don't trust the science on this. So I guess I'll kind of give you a point there, Randy. But please be careful when you do your research. It is very easy to Google yourself into finding evidence that supports whatever position you have. It can be any position, and you can Google your way to find evidence that supports your preconceived belief. All you need to do is basically Google stuff I believe in and confirming stuff I believe in, and you'll largely find the results you want. So be careful when you use the old Google machine to justify whatever beliefs you have. Let's run another phone call. Got David who wants to chime in about healthcare workers. Hi there, David.
Oh my gosh, you're going to make me follow that? Seriously? I would say what Dr. Fauci said to Rand Paul yesterday, what a moron. That's all I'm going to say about Randy. So when Randy needs to get his back fixed, because I know Randy had a back injury, when he needs to have back surgery, I hope he's willing to wait 3 weeks or 3 months like the other people that can't have back surgeries right now, because the hospitals are full with unvaccinated people. And that wasn't even the point I was going to make. The point I wanted to make was the fact that not all of this is COVID related, in the sense that we're inundated with all COVID patients. Right now, what's been going on is these hospitals have been running, basically they shifted their standards of care and they went into crisis modes, and they've made changes in staffing levels and other things like that, that have for 2 years have burned out healthcare workers because the jobs are so much more stressful right now. There's no relief. For instance, there's been instances where people are getting not granted vacation time or sick, not being paid sick time because of reason, you know, the staff isn't there. So they're not granting those things to people who, you know, you put in for a vacation day and you don't get it granted after you've been working in a pandemic for a couple of years. So anyways, I just have to say that's contributing to the short. It's the hospital censuses might not be as high population wise or numbers wise, but the staff isn't there because people are getting burned out and they're quitting. So when Randy calls and says he's unvaccinated and this and that, he's contributing. It's selfish because he's contributing to that burnout of other people's well-being and healthcare, you know, the services not being provided, because the healthcare workers are getting burned out and they're quitting and they're leaving the profession. This is going to be something that's going to be an issue, not right now. It is an issue right now, but this is going to be something potentially lingering, you know, for a long time to come now. Also, you have National Guard troops coming in to help supplement staffing levels. Who's paying for that? You know, that's coming out of our tax dollars to put a Band-Aid for the hospitals and everyone else right now. So, I just got flustered with Randy. I'm sorry. So those are the points I want to make. And so I appreciate you giving me the time here.
Yeah, no problem, David. And I'll still stick with the position that if you're going to choose to get unvaccinated and you need to go to the hospital, you go to the back of the line, even behind people who are having elective surgeries. You should not be able to all of a sudden become a born-again believer in science when you need that medical care. It's just unbelievable that you can say, I don't trust doctors, I don't trust nurses, I don't trust medical professionals, but then all of a sudden when you get sick and you need supplemental oxygen, or God forbid you need to go on a ventilator, well, now I'll go to the hospital. No, I think you should go to the end of the line. And going on another point that David was alluding to, the fact that we are largely going to be paying for people in the National Guard who are going to be having to staff these hospitals. I like an idea we had at the end of Matt's show yesterday. This was a caller that said, if you're vaccinated, you should get a tax credit. I think that's a brilliant idea. All right, we're going to switch subjects and come on back and talk about some other miscellaneous national news and a little bit about redistricting in our final segment here on Hour 1 of the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson filling in for hour one of the Matt McNeil Show today, as Matt did test positive for COVID. Sending him all of our best thoughts and hope he has a speedy recovery from that COVID infection. He is boosted and fully vaxxed, so as I've been saying, good chance it'll hopefully be a mild illness, and we'll get Matt back in the studio in not too long from now. But it is me filling in for hour one, then I got to run to another event, but fortunately, Todd is going to be taking us home during hour two. Matt, I was about to call him Todd Colid. No, that would be Todd Mickelson who's filling in. Todd Colid, of course, is one of our loyal sponsors on AM 950. And it'd be a little tough to get Todd Colid over here to host the show, being that he's currently in Spain. But we got Todd Mickelson filling in for hour two and then taking both hours tomorrow. Just want to finish up with some thoughts, a couple more thoughts on vaccinations and doing your own research, as we heard from Randy during the last segment. Kind of back up. When you sit there and think, well, vaccines don't work and 95% of the medical community is lying when they say the vaccines are effective. I always kind of go by this. If it sounds like BS, if it feels like BS, it probably is BS. Think about that. You're rejecting the science of what 95 to 99% of the medical community. Unbelievable. Like I said, you can Google anything to enforce whatever belief you have. For instance, Patrick, I'll pick on you and me for a second. I could probably run a bunch of Google searches that prove people named Brett or Patrick are, let's say, more likely to become serial killers or something goofy like that. I could probably find all sorts of research on Google that would support my preconceived belief. I could probably find some sort of professional or scientist or someone who's an expert on that field. I don't know necessarily what field that would be. That could enforce whatever preconceived belief I have. So, again, I would go with that. If you're going to be someone who's going to, quote, do your own research, don't use confirmation bias. Don't use your research to confirm your preconceived belief. I always say, if it sounds like BS, if it feels like BS, if it looks like BS, chances are it probably is BS. And don't just do your own research to confirm your bias. All right, got time for a few more stories before we wrap things up. And I do want to briefly touch on redistricting. Oh, man, that's always one of my favorite topics. Redistricting and gerrymandering, always a fun thing to talk about. So here in Minnesota, we, of course, need to redraw our political maps. And the congressional maps in Minnesota have gotten quite a bit of attention. Republicans have proposed a map that would largely give the GOP a 5-3 edge. Basically, their plan would make Angie Craig's current district a little bit more Republican-leaning. Meanwhile, Democrats in the state legislature are proposing a map that would largely preserve the current 4-4 split we have between Democrats and Republicans. The only difference they make with CD2 is that they make Angie Craig's district a little bit more Democratic-leaning. But here's the problem I kind of have with the Dems on this issue right now. You could gerrymander a lot more aggressively than that. Now, I do fully know that, of course, with Republicans in control of the state Senate, any map the DFL proposes is not likely to be enacted. But you could do a lot better than just trying to preserve the 4-4 status quo. I've told you about this website before, davesredistricting.org, where you can draw your own congressional districts in a relatively quick amount of time, where you can basically select like counties or cities and assign them to certain congressional districts. I did my own gerrymandering in favor of Democrats, and I was able to produce a map that gave 5 Democratic districts, 2 Republican districts, and 1 swing district. Here's quickly what I came up with. So my CD1 largely stays the same. That's southern Minnesota. CD2, I make a little bit more Democratic-leaning. That's Angie Craig's district. CD3, still leave that as largely the West Metro. That's the Dean Phillips district. Right now it's a +14 Democratic district under my idea. Stays at about 14. CD4, I make some changes. I have St. Paul in that district, but I also include portions of the Northeast Metro and Northern exurbs, and I was still able to create a 17-point Democratic district. Might not be thrilling to Betty McCollum, but hey, it would help the Dems in the congressional delegation. CD5 would still include Minneapolis, but I instead included Richfield, Bloomington, and the rest of Scott County. It would still be a heavy Democratic district, but not as much as now. And the reason why I do that is then you could create a new CD6. That would be currently, who's in CD6? That's Tom Emmer's district. I could make that a metro area district that would include cities like Maple Grove, Blaine, Roseville, Brooklyn Center, Robbinsdale. It would be a 17-point Democratic district. Meanwhile, CD7, that would still largely encompass western Minnesota, so let Fischbach and Emmer battle that one out. Then CD8, I did my own gerrymandering. I included St. Cloud, Duluth, Bemidji, and Moorhead in that district. It would still largely be northern Minnesota, but I was able to get it to be relatively competitive, only a 4-point Republican district. So I'm doing this quickly, but largely I was able to create a map that met all of the requirements, that created a 5-2 edge for the DFL, and then 1 swing district. So even though I know the DFL does not have full control over the redistricting process, don't be afraid to be a little aggressive when you make your maps when we see what Republicans are doing all over the country. All right, that's all the time I got for Hour 1. Todd Mickelson going to step in and host Hour 2 of the Matt McNeil Show up next.
AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm getting adjusted here. Okay, yeah, my headphones were not up. Anyway, so yeah, here we are. The mic smells like Lysol. If you're watching on Facebook, you can see all the extra stuff we got out here. We're back in COVID mode, heavily. So if you didn't hear Brett last hour, Matt McNeil tested positive for COVID. It's probably Omicron, which is milder. So I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, wishing him all the best. I know a lot of people now who have gotten Omicron, and some of them didn't even realize they were sick. They didn't even realize they had it. They had absolutely no symptoms whatsoever, which is kind of scary in itself. I guess I could have it. But I don't think I will after I'm done with this microphone. I'm getting a heavy whiff of Lysol. I think it's gonna be the Trump cure. Lysol's just gonna permeate through my lungs and kill the virus, I think. But anyway, yes, a big day. I just got called about 2 or 2.5 hours ago to ask if I could come in today, because that's pretty much when Matt tested or found out his results. And my first thought was, you know, I had been doing my day at my business, at my job, kind of, watching videos about ghosts mostly. I have stuff on in the background when I'm assembling the stuff I make at my business. The haunting of all these different people, really, really fun series. So I was thinking about ghosts and guitars. And what I watch, stuff on YouTube about guitars and guitar pedals. And so that's what I had in my head. And all of a sudden, Brett said, "Hey, can you sit in on AM 950? And I thought, I don't know what to talk about. And then one glance at the interwebs and, oh my God, there's so much to talk about. One thing I wanted to mention is we're talking about mask mandates. You heard Brett talking about that. We've got we have vaccine mandates. You have to show proof of vaccine in Minneapolis and St. Paul. There's mask mandates now even being passed in some suburbs, and Brett covered that. There's a mask mandate in Duluth that was just announced today by the mayor, Emily Larson. And I really liked something that she said. You know how everybody's, you know, I mean, they pass the vaccine. You have to show proof of vaccine, and all of the right-wingers are saying, oh, it's just like the Nazis, which is just proof that, you know, they're disingenuous people who don't really know much about history, slash jerks, slash idiots. But Emily Larson then, knowing that it's likely going to be controversial, she takes the you know, the buck stops here kind of approach, and she said, we're having a mask mandate in Duluth, and if you're mad about that, be mad at me. That's what I'm here for. I'm the mayor. I have to do the hard things, make the hard decisions. So congratulations to Mayor Emily Larson of Duluth, Minnesota, who isn't afraid to say it, tell it as it is. I just thought that was really good. One other thing that I wanted to say that's not related to this, a sponsor here on AM 950, Werner Stallion, they are a Minnesota family-owned business, and we just had our microwave go out a couple weeks ago, and we had a really old microwave that was a really weird size that was built into the kitchen with a whole bunch of, you know, different kind of stones on the wall underneath it and cupboards on top. It had to be an exact size. And we were thinking, oh, I don't know, you know, will it take longer with Werner Stallion, or should we just go to Best Buy or something? And we went to Werner Stallion, and they were so great. They gave us first of all, you have a human on the phone who knows things. That hasn't really happened real often to me at some of the big chain stores. And they were able to get us lined up, and within a week, we had a new microwave all installed, and they took our old one away. So I just want to give a huge kudos to Werner Stallion, and please consider them when you need appliances and other things. There's an extra 30 seconds for free for Werner Stallion on AM 950. So I wanted to talk about there's some national things of interest. The Supreme Court made a very unfortunate decision today. We're seeing, again, the effects of the Trump presidency. Even after he's gone, in some ways even worse after he's gone, you know, the horror that we felt the night that he won back in 2016, wondering what was going to happen in the next 4 years. I mean, I thought it was going to be horrible, but it turns out it's worse. You know, a pandemic began. Of course, that's not Trump's fault, but it sure is Trump's fault that we're still living in it. He did everything he could to make sure it lasted as long as possible. And if you're a Trump follower, you are also responsible for that, for spreading lies. So here we are, still in that. But we also have the Supreme Court that he basically, you know, they cheated their way into gaining three more conservative SCOTUS judges. So the decision they made was to overturn the large business mandate that the Biden administration put in place about a month ago or so. And they're overturning a statute that has been longstanding with OSHA. The president does have the right and the power to do something like have a mask and vaccine mandate if it's going to protect Americans. It's his job to protect Americans, and that's what he was doing. The Supreme Court basically ruled today the president does not have the right to protect Americans. That's how I'm going to phrase it, because that's basically how it is. And it again brings up the point that we've been talking about now for over a year, and some people have been talking about it for many years, and we're going to go through it again. using history as our guide. A lot of people talk about that Biden should stack the Supreme Court. And I want everyone to stop saying that, because it's not stacking the Supreme Court. It's basically updating the Supreme Court. The history of the Supreme Court, originally in 1789, that's, of course, when our Constitution was ratified and we had our first president of the United States, President Washington. He split the then 13 state country into three areas, the North, the Central, and the South. And then they created the Supreme Court to have six justices, two for each of those three areas. And then in 1807, President Jefferson and Congress added a seventh judge when an added seventh federal court circuit was added. So right there we have seven federal circuit courts, or you could call them appellate courts. And we had seven judges, and the president and Congress saw fit that we have the same amount, judges and circuit courts. In 1834, President Andrew Jackson and Congress added two more when the federal circuit courts were expanded to nine. Again, a third time that it was decided that we need to have the amount of Supreme Court justices correspond directly to the amount of circuit courts in the country. Now, the term circuit court comes from a bygone age when judges would ride the circuit to hear cases from around the district they were assigned to. Abe Lincoln, in fact, rode his circuit as a judge in Illinois once upon a time, as a state circuit judge. But we're talking about national circuits. Originally, each U.S. Supreme Court justice rode their circuits each summer. That's why the Supreme Court took the summer off back in those days. Finally, after much growth in population and territory in our country, by 1891, it was decided that it took too much time for each of the Supreme Court justices to go through and accurately and thoroughly cover their circuits, because there were too many people in each circuit. The appellate courts were created then to alleviate some of their burden. So courts were then created within the circuits to alleviate the burdens of the Supreme Court. There were nine of those created, one for each circuit and one for each Supreme Court justice. So there were nine appellate courts to cover the nine circuits in the country, and then there were nine Supreme Court justices to oversee each one of those circuits. And currently, there are 13 circuit courts, 13 appellate courts, 13 circuit courts. There are still only nine Supreme Court justices. This is where we get into a space where people think that the precedent is more valuable than it really is. It can be argued that the Constitution of the United States is held on way too high of a stand, put on too high of a pedestal, shall we say, than it should be. Of course, that's why we have amendments to the Constitution, is because the Constitution wasn't good enough. It was written at a certain time, and of course, times change. Things change. A lot of things change. So we need to change the Constitution sometimes. Now, it's not written that there needs to be nine Supreme Court justices in the Constitution. There's nowhere in the Constitution that it talks about the amount of Supreme Court justices. If we want to go by precedent, then we should have by now had 13 Supreme Court justices. I believe the circuits were expanded in the 1930s, and then again, I believe one more time. I don't have that information handy at the moment, but of course, between 1891 and now, there were four more circuit courts added. So we have 13 now. We should have 13 Supreme Court justices, and I mean right now. So when you're advocating to have more Supreme Court justices, don't say Biden should stack the Supreme Court, because that's not what's happening. In reality, we need to update our Supreme Court to go along with the vast growing of the country in both in population and area. So we need 13 Supreme Court justices. So from now on, say, we need to update the Supreme Court to correlate with the circuit courts the way America has done from the very beginning. That's how we need to phrase it. And anyone who wants to argue against that, well, that's their prerogative. But make them argue against that. Don't make them argue against stacking the court. Stacking the court doesn't sound good to me. Nobody wants to stack the court. Of course, Trump did. McConnell did. The Republicans have stacked the court in their favor, and they cheated to do it. I still want to know what happened with Justice Kennedy. There's that moment when Trump tells him something right before they're going to walk into a room for a meeting, and he tells, and I think it was on like a security camera, some camera in the White House, and he called Justice Kennedy over for a meeting. And right before they walk in the room, Trump says something to Kennedy, and Kennedy is taken aback severely. He, you know, glances hard at Trump and sort of winces backwards. And then Trump grabs him and pulls him into the room for a meeting. And then Kennedy announces that he's going to retire. And replaced him with Kavanaugh. And it just so happens that Justice Kennedy's son is the guy who kept giving loans to Trump through the Deutsche Bank. So, smoking gun? I mean, what happened there? It was like an episode of The Sopranos. You can just imagine, you know, what Trump said. I mean, I can't imagine what Trump said, but I know it probably sounded like something Tony Soprano would say. So anyway, the Republicans have stacked the court, and that's why they call it stacking the court, because they know that that sounds crappy. It's just more projection. They say, oh, the Democrats want to stack the court. Well, it's because they want to stack the court. They did stack the court. We don't want to stack the court. We want to update the court so that the amount of Supreme Court justices correlate to the amount of circuit courts in the country. I repeated that so that you would say it as well when you're arguing this point to somebody who's arguing against you. Make them argue against that point, not stacking the court. So it's quite outrageous, this ruling that the Supreme Court made today. And of course, this summer, they're going to be making more judgments on women's right to health care. That's how we put that. We don't say a woman's right to abortion. We say a woman's right to her health care, because abortion is part of a woman's health care. And what's the Supreme Court going to do about that this summer? I don't want to get too graphic about what will happen if that right is taken away. I don't want to get too graphic about what it was like for women before Roe v. Wade was passed and made a constitutional amendment, meaning that it gave women the United States constitutional right for their health care services. So these are how we need to argue against these things. So the Trump curse on America remains. Of course, they also tried to do a coup d'etat, basically. Trump was anticipating a coup d'etat. I think he believed that the military, that the National Guard would start it and the military would be on his side on January 6th. There's also some really huge news that came out about that we'll talk about when we come back. Let's take a break. And if you have anything to say, the number here is 952-946-6205. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. Everybody get up. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the voice of the progressive voice of Minnesota. One of many voices, this particular one being progressive. There was a lawyer. He was talking to his client on the phone, and then his client said, oh, the FBI, an FBI special agent is outside, and he's saying that I need to come out with my hands up and be arrested. The client, Stuart Rhodes, founder of far-right Oath Keepers. I'm sure you've heard of this, about this today. It's a pretty huge development in the whole January 6th thing. FBI agents on Thursday arrested Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers, and charged him with seditious conspiracy, the Justice Department announced. The sedition charge marks a major and largely unexpected advancement in the federal investigation into the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. The Department of Justice also charged 11 other Oath Keepers with seditious conspiracy. Most of those group members already faced other charges related to storming the Capitol on January 6th, including conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. And the congressional counting of the certification of the electoral votes is what they were trying to obstruct. A lot of them were also charged with picketing without a license, breaking and entering into the Capitol, breaking stuff in the Capitol, taking stuff from the Capitol. But now they're charged with seditious conspiracy. I mean, how often does that happen? It sounds like something, you know, from the revolutionary times or something. I actually wondered so much how often does this happen that I went and looked it up. Basically, I did a search and Wikipedia came up with in 1936, a Puerto Rican nationalist and nine others were charged with forcibly attempting to overthrow the government of the United States in Puerto Rico. They were jailed for 10 years in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1980, another Puerto Rican nationalist and nine other people were charged with seditious conspiracy for attempting to overthrow the government of the United States in Puerto Rico again. They were each given sentences of up to 90 years in prison. The Fort Smith sedition trial, that was 10 white supremacists were indicted for seditious conspiracy in 1987. For crimes in related to other stuff. But anyway, they got seditious conspiracy. And 1995, a prominent Muslim cleric and nine others were convicted of seditious conspiracy. They had been accused of a terrorist plots in New York City. In 2010, nine members of some clan I didn't really hear of, doesn't matter. They were charged with seditious conspiracy. And then already on Wikipedia, when I looked it up, on January 13th, 2022, Stuart Rhodes, along with 10 other members of the Oath Keepers, was charged with seditious conspiracy in relation to the attack on January 6th, 2021. So we're talking about six different incidences that are five different ones that are as big as the one today, six counting the one today. Seditious conspiracy is basically, if you threaten to turn the government over, you know, if you basically threaten to have a coup d'etat, it's seditious, and there's more than one person involved, it's seditious conspiracy. You don't have to actually perform the act. You just need to be planning it with, you know, two or more people. That's what makes it a conspiracy. And people have been talking about Merrick Garland not being tough enough and the January 6th committee not being tough enough. Well, all of a sudden, we have 11 people total being charged with seditious conspiracy for what happened and what led up to the January 6th attack on the Capitol. A lot of it is crazy stuff. In court documents made public on Thursday, prosecutors alleged that Rhodes spent large sums on weapons in the days before January 6th, including $10,000 on an AR-15 and $17,000 on other military equipment. Rhodes further purchased and shipped tactical gear, and a weapon sight to an unnamed individual in Virginia near Washington, D.C., just before January 6th. Rhodes allegedly helped to organize a so-called quick reaction force in a Northern Virginia hotel room. Now, of course, Northern Virginia is basically right across the river from Washington, D.C. Now, you can't have firearms in Washington, D.C. So, right across the river, in a hotel room, they had a quick reaction force ready to go. And they had a bunch of weapons and ammunition stored just outside of Washington, D.C. So they were anticipating an armed, completely armed coup d'etat going beyond an armed insurrection, which is what it already is. Oath keepers who stashed weapons at this place in the Virginia Hotel, they brought to the D.C. area just ahead of January 6th. Rhodes has said the oath keepers anticipated using the weapons inside D.C. if Trump declared a national emergency and called on oath keepers and other militia groups to help him keep order. That is what Trump was hoping to do. That's what a lot of people were advising Trump to do. You call a state of emergency, and then basically you call martial law. The indictment also includes new details from a leadership intel chat allegedly convened by Rhodes just after the November 2020 election. Rhodes says, quote, in November 2020, I believe just a couple days after the election, we aren't getting through this without a civil war. He told this to a group of oath keepers. It's too late for that. Prepare your mind, body, spirit. The indictment contains further stark evidence from alleged communications among Rhodes and fellow oath keepers in the run-up to January 6th, with Rhodes anticipating a bloody and desperate fight, is what he called it. A bloody and desperate fight if Biden became president. Further planning by oath keepers in those talks allegedly included holding a training session to focus on convoy operations and setting up hasty ambushes. They were out for blood. They were out to start a new civil war in the United States. The charges against Rhodes and his alleged co-conspirators also offer a warning to other extremist groups potentially planning violence. Disrupting the potential for recruitment and fundraising for these violent organizations has always been the goal. This is said by Juliet Kayyem, a counterterrorism expert and former senior official in the Department of Homeland Security. She goes on to say, we can't make this country united with a single case, but we can begin to limit the nurturing of violence. Now, that has been going on quite a bit. And a lot of these extremist groups have basically gone bankrupt and been broken up, which is a really good thing. There's an awful lot going on in this huge mess. A lot, people feel like there's not enough going on. There's not enough accountability going on, but there is an awful lot going on. And this is the most complex and largest investigation that the DOJ has ever had to do. And within just a little more than a year, we've got 11 people arrested for seditious conspiracy. I would say the DOJ is moving pretty quickly. Again, I don't know if you've heard me say this on here before, but Richard Nixon's attorney general went to prison, but it wasn't for 3 years until after Nixon actually even resigned, almost 4 years after the crime was discovered. But his attorney general did go to prison. But it took years. The DOJ moving through this, and now the January 6th committee, which is supposed to be starting some actual fireworks on TV, probably starting as soon as earlier. So those are the methods that the Congress used to basically turn America finally onto their side of that Nixon should be held accountable. There were an awful lot of people that were saying the same thing about Richard Nixon that they're saying about Trump now. But once they started to see the whole crime and cover-up unfold on TV, and they heard how Richard Nixon spoke and all of this, these kind of things, when they start to see that Donald Trump actually was trying and hoping to do an armed coup d'etat using the military, more people are going to turn against him. Of course, you got to remember that a huge, huge, overwhelmingly large amount of the majority of America are already against him. Very, very small group of followers at this point in time. Even this leader of the Oath Keepers was talking to his lawyer on the phone when he got arrested about a meeting he was going to get together with the January 6th committee. So even he was planning on cooperating. So, there's a lot of other, you know, public standouts who are trying to resist, but it's not going to go well for them. And now that's starting to get to be the minority leader of the Republicans in Congress and the former Republican vice president. They are now having to decide how they want to handle it because they're being called in to cooperate with January 6th committee. So let's take a break and come back. And there's always tons to talk about. So if you have anything to say, 952-946-6205. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. All right. Some Minnesota music to see in a couple Minnesota stories. How about? Here's a really interesting and I think really fun story that our Senator Tina Smith, she tweeted some news. I made a request last year for Wilma Mankiller, the first woman elected principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, to be featured on the U.S. Quarter. The U.S. Mint has approved my request, and her quarter is getting minted this year. What a great name. Wilma Mankiller, going to be featured on the U.S. quarter. Very important news that I heard a little bit about, only because I'm involved in the DFL party and stuff a lot, helping candidates, working with candidates. But now it's starting to get to be announced. Ken Martin, I'm just going to read a tweet. Excited to announce that last evening the DFL State Executive Committee adopted my proposal to allow our local organizing units to have an option to conduct contactless COVID-safe precinct caucuses. So the precinct caucuses are happening on February 1st, and it's not the kind of thing you want to go to if we're having a huge surge in COVID cases. So it's a very good thing. It sucks, of course, but it's also a very good thing. It sucks that we're still here. Again, you anti-vaxxers, it's your fault. You Trump supporters who lied about all of this stuff, it's your fault that we're still in this. And so the precinct caucuses are going to be, there's at least going to be a choice for remote, which is good because I don't want to be walking around in a very crowded school or something with, you know, hundreds of people very closely packed into school rooms and you know, running around with candidates trying to get them to talk as much as they can. This way, the candidates can present to everybody at once because it'll be, you know, on something like a Zoom file or something like that. It's good. It sucks that it has to be this way because call me a geek, but precinct caucuses is a fun night, I believe, and I think it's really good civic exercise because people get together and talk about very important things, which is about how we're going to manage our form of government. And now it's going to have to be on, you know, Zoom time or something. But anyway, there's, of course, always some Minnesota GOP news that is aggravating. there's an event from the Conservative Freedom Club, founded and funded by Bob Cummins. Basically, he said, we're kicking off the 2022 election year with a massive rally and training on how to stop voter fraud with the champion of voter integrity and Trump-endorsed candidate for Arizona Secretary of State, Mark Finchem. That's what the flyer says. The event is planned for this coming Monday. Of course, that's also Martin Luther King Day. But I don't think they care about that, so they're just doing it on Martin Luther King Day. Now, this guy from Arizona, who's going to be their, you know, their big attraction at this event, again, his name is Mark Finchem. He continues spreading false claims without any evidence about the 2020 election. So the Minnesota GOP is still talking about the 2020 election. I think that's great because it adds to our chances of winning in 2022, because they're not even preparing to run. All they're doing is preparing to complain about the past 2020 election. He's also talking about January 6th, the anniversary of the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol. He tweeted that election officials in two Arizona counties rigged the vote in Arizona with tens of thousands of fraudulent votes in each of those counties. The partisan Arizona audit commissioned by Arizona State Republicans upheld the election result. Now, that's the crazy Maricopa County thing where they had the cyber ninjas come in. That's why I'm reading basically from the Reformer, the Minnesota Reformer, who writes this today. Ricardo Lopez from the Minnesota Reformer is what I'm reading from. And he calls it the partisan Arizona audit commissioned by Arizona Senate Republicans. Spent, I don't know, a few million taxpayer dollars to hire cyber ninjas to do this. They corrupted a bunch of stuff. They have to buy new machines and all this. They wrecked a bunch of stuff. But they still, even after that, they upheld the election result. They said, nope, I guess Biden did win Arizona. But still, the Minnesota GOP is having an event where they have this crazy guy who's going against all that and still claiming that there's tons of evidence. It sounds like Trump on that interview that he walked out on the other day on NPR. It's overwhelming. I won by a lot. I won by a lot, that I can tell you. Biden, nobody came to any of his things. How can nobody come to his things and then get 80 million votes? It's a fraud. That's basically the Minnesota GOP right now. This is why none, exactly zero, of the Minnesota GOP candidates for governor were able to answer the question that, yes, Biden is the president, and yes, he won the election in 2020. They're all scared to answer that question. They're in a primary now, so they're scared to answer that question because they're going to be the one who's going to lose the primary if they're the only one who admits the truth. But after the primary election comes the general election, which the Republicans have not won a statewide election for either Senate seat or the gubernatorial seat or any other seat, statewide seat, since 2006. 15 years, they have not been able to win a statewide seat in Minnesota. And this is what the Minnesota Republicans are doing. They're talking like Trump, and they think they're going to take over. They think they're going to take over the governor's mansion in Minnesota by sounding like Trump, living in the past, not talking at all about the 2020. I guess they say, oh, we're kicking off the 2022 election, but of course they're having a massive rally talking about the 2020 election. So I think it's going to be entertaining. I wanted to tell you a little bit about something very interesting. Now we're going to national. Chuck Schumer, his plan to bring elections to the Senate floor is quite interesting. I'm just reading this from a Politico article, but I found the very beginning of it very interesting. Chuck Schumer will bring elections and voting legislation to the Senate floor in the coming days, using existing congressional rules to evade an initial GOP filibuster. The House will imminently pass a bill containing both sweeping federal elections reform. I believe they did that today. I know they passed at least one of them. Patrick, did you hear? Did they pass both of them, or
I have not heard.
Yeah. So anyway, the House passed one, is going to pass the other, the voting rights bills, and because the bill will be sent to the Senate as a message from the House, it will not be subject to an initial filibuster by the GOP, and it will therefore be debated on the floor. So the Senate will confront its raging debate over the filibuster when Majority Leader Schumer moves to shut down the debate. So basically what's going to happen is the bills will be presented as a message, and then Chuck Schumer, being the leader, the majority leader in the Senate, will say, okay, we're going to debate this message from the House right now, which basically we're going to debate voting rights legislation. So he's going to make it get talked about on the Senate floor, and then he's going to make people vote on it after it's debated for a long time. So we're still having trouble. Now, I guess we're having trouble with Sinema. It sounded like Manchin was ready to maybe do a carve-out of some sort with the filibuster. Now Sinema had a speech today saying, no way! I want to be on camera now! So she's saying no way. So now she's going to have to, you know, vote against what's going to be talked about. So the whole thing about the filibuster has evolved into being you don't have to do anything for the filibuster. It used to be a talking filibuster, even as like 7 years ago. If you remember, Ted Cruz had to do a talking filibuster when he shut down the government in 2011 or 2013. He was reading Green Eggs and Ham on the floor, and he was not allowed to take a drink of water or sit down or stop talking. That's what filibuster used to be. Now you don't even have to be on the floor. You can just call in and say, yeah, I'm filibustering this. But Chuck Schumer is going to force the old-fashioned way to happen. He's going to force it to be debated on the floor so that everybody who votes against it will be going against what was just talked about, showing that they don't want Americans to have voting rights. They're voting against Americans' voting rights, and it's going to be talked about and pointed out to them before they have the chance to vote on it. They can't just filibuster it without any debate whatsoever. So I think that's great, and I think Chuck Schumer's doing pretty well. I think, I know a lot of people complain about him. They complain about Merrick Garland. They complain about everybody. But really, everybody's doing, I think, a really good job. They're up against really overwhelmingly crazy odds to get some of this stuff done. So good job, Chuck Schumer. And that might be happening right now, actually. I've been on the radio, so I'm not up on news. I'm supposed to be keeping you up on news, but I haven't heard. For all I know, it's being debated on the Senate floor right now. I know he wanted to get a vote on it before Monday, but he did tell people to be prepared to stay in town over the weekend. So it may be debated over the weekend on TV, you know, on C-SPAN. So all Americans can see what people are voting for and against. Very good thing. So, wow, hour goes by quickly. We're not quite done, but we've got a few minutes left. Let's take another break and come back and finish out the show. Again, I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. A few minutes left in the hour here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Patrick, have you ever heard of the Commission on Presidential Debates?
I actually do not think I have.
Yeah, I don't know that I had either. They don't put themselves as part of the news, but basically they're a nonprofit commission. They were founded by the two parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans in 1987 to codify the debates as a permanent part of presidential elections. And it just is nonpartisan. But of course, Republicans have complained for nearly a decade that its processes favor the Democrats. Always those liberal media, liberal everything. So, of course, this commission, what I do know, and probably what you've noticed as well, Patrick, is that the debates are basically done in as nonpartisan of a fashion as possible. As far as who they pick to host it, Fox News always gets to host one where they have their people be the moderators. But that's not enough for Republicans. So the Republican National Committee is preparing to change its rules to require presidential candidates seeking the party's nomination to sign a pledge to not participate in any debates sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. So they don't want to even communicate with the American people anymore. This is, that sounds like a dictatorship to me. You know, we just do whatever we want. We don't care what you think. We're no longer here to protect and serve the people of the country. We're just here for our own selves to make sure that we maintain power and money. That's the Republican Party right now. I'm not going to call it a Trump thing. It's because Trump is just a symptom of it. He's not the cause. The Republicans have been leaning toward this for years, decades, starting for sure back in the Nixon days when Roger Ailes was working with Nixon in communications. And Nixon said, we need to have a goddamn GOP TV. And what did Roger Ailes be a part of by the 1990s? They should have just called themselves GOP TV instead of Fox News. They got rid of all the FCC rules on broadcasting. I learned about those. I went to Brown Institute back in the early 80s. And then in 1986 and 7, all those rules were lifted. There was a cap on how many radio stations one entity could own so that we didn't have, a big monopoly where one company just bought up all the radio stations and television stations. It was a way to make sure that we had fair and balanced media. Those rules were lifted. Of course, everyone knows about the fairness doctrine, where basically if I'm going to interview, say, Joe Biden, then I also need to interview Donald Trump, if it was last year when they were running against each other. That used to be the fairness doctrine. You couldn't run commercials lopsided either. If you ran a commercial that was paid for by the Republicans, then you had to run a commercial that was paid for by the Democrats. All those things were lifted, and that's then the first thing that happened starting in 1987 or 8 is Rush Limbaugh going on the air, talking about whatever he wants to talk about. Now the Republicans don't even want us to hear their presidential candidates in a debate against their opponent. They're afraid to debate. They're afraid to debate the Democrats. That's where they are now. So anyway, we've got more to talk about tomorrow. I'll be sitting in for Matt again from 4 to 6 tomorrow. We'll see you there on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.